We have very high levels of debt around the world, about $100 trillion of debt globally, and an ever-increasing amount of debt unless there are big changes in policies. So the advice that the IMF gives on fiscal, and that is core to the work of the IMF, is going to be critical.
Geeta Gopinath took a leave of absence from Harvard University back in 2018 to take on the role of IMF chief economist. And after having dealt with the pandemic and some of the most complex geopolitically induced economic crises ever, she was appointed first deputy managing director of the institution. Now she's returning to Harvard. What's she taking back with her?
I think I have a much better understanding of what are the main issues that countries grapple with. For example, I think there is a bit of a disconnect between the work that's done in academia on sovereign debt versus what exactly are the main issues that need solutions in the world.
Geeta Gopinath is now the Gregory and Anya Coffey Professor of Economics at Harvard, and that's where she was when I asked her what it was like to go back to academia after all these years of being so hands-on in the economic policy space.
So I started January of 2019, and it has been a terrific experience. I mean, it's been a really great honor to work with so many countries to tackle unprecedented challenges like the pandemic, the war in Ukraine, and rising geoeconomic fragmentation. I believe my academic background was actually very helpful in coming up with solutions for these shocks that had never been seen in a long time. The work on monetary policy, fiscal policy, external balances, exchange rates, I mean, all of that benefited from the academic background I have. So my going back to academia, I see that as reinvesting in that stock of knowledge. And I'm also very excited to take back the experience that I've had at the IMF, which has been a tremendous learning experience, also to use that to think through what I will do in terms of future research and teaching.
Nice. So you played two very important but distinctly different roles during those years. How would you describe the difference between your work as a chief economist versus as a deputy managing director? And is there one role that you felt that you were perhaps better prepared for walking in?
I think both were very exciting roles. As I see it, at least from an institutional perspective, as chief economist, I had more of an advisor's role. And as first deputy managing director and being part of Kristalina's management team, I was closer to being a decision maker on institutional matters. So I think that was an important difference. As chief economist, I was certainly closer to my academic background because I had to focus mainly on economic analysis, come up with the narrative for how we see the world economy evolving that comes out of the World Economic Outlook, and providing strategic guidance for research in the research department. As first deputy managing director, of course, I'm part of the team that provides strategic guidance for the institution as a whole, which goes beyond research, but includes programs, policies, capacity development. So many areas here. And in addition to thinking about the economics, I also had to give attention to political considerations that come with being in management.
Right. And so, as you said, there were many crises to deal with, but the pandemic led to something the world had never really dealt with before, known thanks to you, as the Great Lockdown, a phrase that you came up with and that stuck. Have we ever managed to shake off the effects of the Great Lockdown, do you think? Or has it had a lasting impact on the way the global economy is working these days?
So, Bruce, if you look at broad economic indicators, I would say that things have gone better than we expected. So if you look at the extent of scarring from the pandemic, it has been very low to non-existent for advanced economies. In fact, in the case of the U.S., the economy has actually done better than pre-pandemic projections. Emerging markets also, while they had some slight scarring, it wasn't major. Low-income countries certainly were more harder hit. But I would say that the outcome, you know, 5 years after the pandemic, at least from the pandemic itself, has turned out to be better than was expected. Now, that said, I think there are lasting features that have come out of the pandemic, and I would point to two. One is that the supply chain disruptions that happened during the pandemic has now triggered many countries to think about self-reliance, especially in critical sectors. And then the second is the inflation surge that happened during the pandemic in pretty much all countries has increased the cost of living for many, many people around the world. And that is a difficulty that remains to be addressed. I would say both these streams have impacted policymaking around the world and also politics and the world that we live in right now.
So I'm curious about your personal story from a pretty modest upbringing in India to being named one of the most influential women in your field. In such a short period of time, you obviously did lots of things right, but what are a couple of things maybe that you think helped get you to where you are today?
Well, thank you, Bruce. And if I may say so, I'd like to think of myself as being influential as an economist in this field, not just as a woman in this field. So I think it's broader than just being an influential women economist. In terms of what has helped, I would say one is that all through my life, be it in my younger days and later on, I always challenged myself and I kept raising the bar in terms of what I wanted to accomplish. So that put me in sometimes uncomfortable situations, but that's, I think, what has kept me going and brought me to where I am. And I think a lot of grit has been incredibly helpful and important too. And the second, I would say, most important factor is luck, which I categorize as including fantastic support from my parents growing up, but also my husband and son, who have provided incredible support all through these years. When I was in D.C. working at the IMF, they were both in Boston, and not once did they complain about all the time that I was away from them. So I'm incredibly grateful to them for providing me with that emotional support. And more generally, I've had the privilege of working with exceptional colleagues at the IMF, including, you know, Christine Lagarde, who gave me the job as chief economist, and Kristalina, who gave me the job as first deputy managing director, but then also many, many, many other colleagues at the fund who were incredibly kind. And without them, I don't think I could have remotely done the job as I have done these past years.
And I remember speaking with you a few years ago, I guess probably in the midst of the pandemic, and I asked you if you thought it was a little overwhelming, and your answer was no. I mean, essentially what you said was, you know, bring it on. You were ready for it.
Yes, I think that's how I've been, have tended to be most of my life.
Well, maybe sticking to the family for just a minute, if you don't mind. I understand your husband is also an economist working at the Poverty Lab, which does amazing work. In fact, they were awarded the Nobel Prize for it not so long ago. But I suspect that macro stability, what you've been involved in all these years, especially at the fund, doesn't always jive with poverty reduction thinking, perhaps. That must make for some pretty interesting dinner conversations, no?
So the Poverty Action Lab is at MIT, which is where my husband Iqbal works. And so, yes, we have plenty of debates and discussions about macro solutions versus micro solutions, which is what the Poverty Action Lab focuses on. I think one thing I've taken away from my time at the IMF is how critically good macro policy is for the livelihoods of people at every level of income. And I think that's also what I take back with me when I go back, as I go in academia, you know, it gives me a lot of inspiration to continue doing the research and teaching in this space because I know how much it matters for the world.
So you obviously have a very broad understanding of macroeconomics to do what you've done here at the fund. But there are a few topics that regularly come up in your research, like dollar dominance and capital flows, which is the subject of one of your most recent research papers. Why so much interest in those aspects of the economy?
Yes, I mean, those are two topics on which I think people associate me with most, even though I've done a bunch of work in other areas. I think, you know, thinking about dollar dominance, et cetera, comes from the perspective that the world is highly asymmetric, which may seem obvious, but that's not how this classic policy toolkit view the world. So if you go back to Mandel Fleming of the 1960s, the lens through which they view the world was of symmetry, right? So the importance of your currency in the world depends upon how much you trade with the world. Reality is so far from that. And it's not just about that emerging markets don't get to use their currencies as much, but in including many advanced economies, their currencies don't really show up in the world, like depending upon their share in global trade. Instead, what you see is dollar dominance, not just in trade, but in finance, in payments, in reserves. And that has very important implications for the way economies respond to shocks, what kinds of policies will work and what don't. And so I think it's and this asymmetry is what I focused on. And I believe the current time that we're living in is an important reflection of that asymmetry in power in the world.
Yeah.
And so this is an area where I have pursued more work, including on the integrated policy framework, which was exactly about recognizing that most developing countries don't have their currencies being used in international trade. And that has important implications for how shocks to their capital flows, for instance, affect their economies and how they should respond to them.
Do you see that changing? Speaking of dollar dominance, do you see that changing in any significant way in the near future?
I mean, as of now, I don't see major changes. What is critical to the dollar's dominance in the world are the strength of its institutions and the depth and liquidity of its financial markets and the law and order in the country. So this is all these features have been absolutely supportive of dollar dominance. And as long as those remain, I would say that the dollar would keep its status for a long time.
So you've helped introduce some new ideas in this old institution. Its views on capital flows, as you just explained, is an example of that. Fragmentation is another term that you came up with and that we all use now. What are some of the innovations your successor might think about pushing for to keep the institution where it needs to be, given how quickly things are changing in the global economy?
Yeah. Thank you, Bruce. I mean, firstly, I think the term fragmentation probably precedes me. But yes, I think geoeconomic fragmentation is a major challenge for the world economy right now. In terms of the big areas that the fund will need to continue to push on, one is on external imbalances. As you know, Article 1 of the IMF is about supporting balanced trade around the world. That is now the focus of much of policymaking right now, is how to get more balanced trade, a more level playing field. Here, the IMF plays a very important role in explaining what it would take to have countries running the appropriate level of external balances. So that's one big area where I think more work will continue to happen. The second big topic for the world is on the fiscal front, on debt. We have very high levels of debt around the world, about $100 trillion of debt globally, and an ever-increasing amount of debt, unless there are big changes in policies. So the advice that the IMF gives on fiscal, and that again is core to the work of the IMF, is going to be completely critical, in addition to continuing to help improve the debt resolution architecture. The Global Sovereign Debt Roundtable has been very helpful in this regard, along with the common framework, but I expect this will require continued close attention. And the third is in the space of finance and financial markets. I think there are two important developments with the increasing role of non-bank financial institutions, and now possibly a much bigger role for crypto assets, including stable coins. Right. Those have implications for financial markets around the world, for cross-border capital flows. And again, this is squarely an area where the IMF's expertise is going to be critical to weigh in on the developments and help countries deal with these developments.
And finally, maybe just bring it back to where we started on your thoughts about going back to Harvard. How might these 7 or 8 years at the fund change your approach to being an educator? I mean, will the 2025 version of Professor Gopinath be any different from the 2017 version?
I expect it will be. I hope it will be. I've firstly, to start with, as I mentioned previously, I'm going back and very energized about the importance of macroeconomics, of international macroeconomics for the well-being of the world. And I think the IMF has really been an eye-opener in that regard. And so I go back with a renewed spirit to push ahead on research and on teaching in this area. Second, I think I have a much better understanding of what are the main issues that countries grapple with, as opposed to before my time at the IMF. For example, I think there is a bit of a disconnect between the work that's done in academia on sovereign debt versus what exactly are the main issues that need solutions in the world. Secondly, thanks to the work on the integrated policy framework, I feel like we now have an improved framework to not just teach students, but also to help advise countries on how to react to external shocks. I think it's an improvement over the Mandel-Fleming model. And again, so I'm excited about developing that further and also training students in seeing the world through this much wider lens of asymmetries.
Geeta Gopinath, former IMF Chief Economist and Deputy Managing Director, now back at Harvard. Thanks so much for everything you've done here at the Fund. Wish you the best of luck. And thanks for sharing some of your experience with us today.
Thank you, Bruce. I really appreciate this opportunity to speak with you.
Again, that was Geeta Gopinath, back at Harvard University as the Gregory and Anya Coffey Professor of Economics. Look for other IMF podcasts on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. You can also follow us on X. Our handle is @IMF_podcast. I'm Bruce Edwards. Thanks for listening.